My name is Larry Friedman, and I'm a partner in the law firm of Edwards Wildman and Palmer. And I'm going to try and go over with you some of the issues associated with data privacy and security in the cloud. I think what we'll try and do is cover two sets of issues. We'll give you the basics, sort of the core food groups, if you will, associated with data privacy and security. And then we'll get you what is a rapidly evolving area, some of the cutting edge, like what's happening right now, sorts of developments. Let me just say preliminarily that I think this set of issues, some of the compliance issues, are one of the most challenging towards the future of cloud deployment. The technology, I think we're solving, and not only solving, but we're seeing significant advances. So it's not about figuring out how to deploy remote servers or develop desktop as a service. We're getting all that. I think one of the challenges and perhaps opportunities associated with this space are European data privacy requirements that are making cloud companies face crazy decisions like trying to deploy data centers in Ireland when the data really needs to belong in the United States, and tough issues associated with what the courts are doing to kind of tamp down on data privacy and security. So to me, these are actually some of the toughest challenges towards the successful deployment of cloud. And why don't we just dive into it? I think in terms of understanding the basics of data privacy and security, you sort of start off with two sort of basic obligations. One is to protect, and two is to disclose. And so these are flip sides of the same coin. I think what the law in terms of regulation and compliance and regulatory decisions, including from the Federal Trade Commission and from the European Commission and others, what all these things are basically dictating to stakeholders in the cloud space is a duty to protect data. That means something called reasonable security, whatever that means, for corporate data. And it passes to not only the original maker or distributor of that data, that is the cloud client, but oftentimes through state laws and other regulations to the cloud company who is the custodian of that data. So side number one of the coin is have a plan in place. The state of Massachusetts has what is known as the gold standard, which applies throughout the United States and beyond, called a written information security plan. There are variations of that, but you need to have a plan in place for how data is going to be protected. You need that because oftentimes regulatory guidance dictates that. You need it because if there is a problem, you know, goodness forbid, and the regulators or a plaintiff's lawyer comes knocking on your door, you need to have something more than high hopes as to what you did to prevent that data breach from happening in the first place. The second is the duty to disclose data breaches. And this is the other side of the coin. So this is, you've done everything properly to kind of protect against a data breach, but unfortunately it happens. What is your plan to kind of respond to that, and what do regulatory and legal and statutory guidelines dictate that plan look like? And it varies, but generally that guidance will dictate the individual parties who are affected, whether it's personal information if you are a target customer, or regulators who want to know what's going on, and increasingly, as you will see, including most recently in Florida, are legislating that they get notice of what's going on. What's really interesting for any public companies in this space is the Securities and Exchange Commission is now heavily involved in cybersecurity and have regulated requirements that material risks associated with cybersecurity be a mandatory disclosure in the public filings of any publicly filed companies. And they are active in this area and they are cracking down, and this is going to be an area of increased scrutiny as we go forward. So, where do these data security obligations evolve from? There's sort of a range of different sources of the legal constraints in this area. Certainly many statutes and regulations dictate this. There are privacy laws. There are state level security laws and regulations. So privacy laws, particularly in Europe, talk about a individual or corporate citizen's right to have their information remain private. Security laws are what I was talking about before, the requirements for keeping information secure. The Federal Trade Commission, one of the most active stakeholders in this space from a regulatory perspective, and their authority under Section 5 for unfair business practices and enforcement against those. corporate governance legislation and regulations, so SOX, and as I was saying, the SEC is SOX, standing for Sarbanes-Oxley, of course, increasingly legislating in this area. And perhaps most importantly, when you get into a vertical sector, so if you are a cloud provider and a stakeholder offering services to companies in certain sectors, the big three are healthcare, financial, and government, but there are others. There's sector-specific regulations. So healthcare is, I think we all acknowledge who have been in this space for any amount of time, understand it's intuitive that healthcare is sensitive information. The law has recognized that. There is a law called HIPAA, which generally dictates the requirements to keep healthcare data private and secure. Its companion law is called HITECH. Most recently, about a year ago, those laws were amended to make it crystal clear that there's no free pass for cloud companies. So before that amendment of about a year ago, there was at least a question or an argument that a cloud company as a custodian of the data did not have the same obligations that the originators of the data had. That has been buttoned down and nailed down, and the answer is cloud companies are subject to these requirements. To comply, there are certain security measures that must be taken. Evidence of that is memorialized in something called a business associate agreement, which we work on all the time. The business associate agreement has to be backed up by compliance. And those are some of the things that companies are doing to comply with some of the HIPAA requirements. GLB is Graham Leach Bliley, that's the financial. SEC is the Security and Exchange Commissions. And the Children's Online Privacy Act are other examples of specific sectors that have their own regulations for cloud privacy and security. These are other areas, common law, just court decisions and cases and regulatory decisions that come down, the rules of evidence. In a contract, there's virtually zero contracts negotiated in the cloud space today that don't talk to some sort of requirement or obligation about data privacy and security. And you have to look at those contracts, and indeed you have to be, I think, smart in negotiating those agreements in the first place to not only understand what you're taking on, but to figure out what is required and what is reasonable in terms of shifting or allocating the risk and responsibility for that data privacy and security breach. It's prima facie with the customer. Certain sector-specific requirements shift that responsibility to the cloud custodian. There's still an opportunity to kind of shift the what-ifs and the consequences of all those things in the contract between the cloud provider and customer. Industry self-regulation and self-imposed obligations. Self-imposed, you have to be careful. Sometimes I've seen it, for example, and I will not mention the name, but there's a company, actually a client of our firm, who sort of the marketing people and the sales people to get business in a specific sector the nerdy lawyers get all concerned about this, sort of extreme promises on their website that we will guarantee that you're going to be compliant with, you know, XYZ industry compliance obligations. And it's a great sales pitch, and it is actually a way to use data privacy and security as a way to get the business. But you have to be really careful, because once that's public and once that's out there, that can be used against you down the road. So, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? What is reasonable? This whole area is still evolving, and I mean, at the end of the day, hopefully common sense will carry at least some part of the day. We have some guidance in some of these industry areas. Again, financial and Graham Leach Bliley. FISMA, which is the federal law dictating cloud provisions, which has been memorialized through FedRAMP, which you've heard about, which is a specific regime for accrediting secure cloud providers to the federal government. And HIPAA in Massachusetts, which we've talked about. Largely defined by the FTC for all other sectors. So the Federal Trade Commission, like the SEC, is actively concerned about cybersecurity risk and the dangers that that poses, in this case, to consumers. And so they're very active in enforcing complaints regarding that. This is what I talked about earlier, the Written Information Security Program. So let me just stop for a minute. From a cloud stakeholder perspective, two sides of the coin and some variants. Side number one, a program in place to prevent a breach, whether it's a written information security program or a variant of that. Side number two, what do we do, what is our preparedness, what is our contingency plan if there is a breach? And then variants are, if I'm in a particular industry, whether it's healthcare, financial, government, or other, what are the sector-specific requirements that apply to me? That is a sort of nutshell of what is evolving in the data privacy and security world. This now gives you a little more detail about what some of those plans would look like. And a lot of these comments, which I'm not going to go through every one, I think you would hopefully agree with me, are hopefully common sense. It's not often that you can say that about the law and lawyers and regulations, but assigning responsibility for who is to act on a problem, identifying what needs to be protected, conducting a risk assessment. That's becoming standard. Many sophisticated commercial customers, of course, require it of their cloud providers. We like to do, with our clients, desktop table exercises to do a what if. The Securities and Exchange Commission is increasingly pushing for that and some of the required disclosures that they are imposing. Selecting, once you've done all that and you understand the risk, then doing the things necessary to protect against the risk, developing and implementing those security controls. Addressing third-party security, so this is where the customer and the cloud provider have to allocate that risk and responsibility between them. Monitoring the effectiveness of the program and review, reassess, and adjust. These are some of the things that are what I would call the basics. Three core cloud security requirements, particularly on the customer side. Due diligence in the selection of a cloud provider. I'm in the process right now of representing a customer in deploying to the cloud. And I have to tell you, just as an aside, it has been a fascinating process. Aside from all of these sort of highfalutin issues, it's been rather surprising to me some of the blocking and tackling issues, or lack of blocking and tackling, that some of the responsive parties have engaged in wanting to address this customer. But in any event, who's your provider? In deference to the prior speaker, what was the old expression? You never got criticized for picking IBM. So there's that initial sort of concept that big is good, and a well-established, highly known name is a default better choice. But it gets complicated, and there's diligence involved. Some of the entrepreneurial companies are actually great companies and offer quality service, and so it's just about due diligence. It's about imposing in the contract the right security requirements that work for your particular situation. And it's about monitoring, and it's about coming up with effective protocols in the contract to make sure that those requirements are not a joke. So whether it's having ongoing monitoring requirements, ongoing status reports, SLAs are a no-brainer. I would love if I could get them some sort of liquidated damages so I don't have a Hobson's choice of terminate or lump it if there's a breach of those SLAs. Those are some of the various factors that we look at when we're negotiating contracts that are fair and reasonable to both sides, but give the cloud customer some comfort that they're going to be okay. Because as many of the speakers have said, this is one of the major blocking points for a lot of companies who want to deploy to the cloud. They are scared to death at letting their data go out from under their nose. And I know we have all the answers and all the pitch points that they're better off with that, but this still remains a key sticking point. Here's some other sources that provide guidance on what is appropriate data security. The United States European Union Safe Harbor Program. So let me just mention, if you don't already know it, that there is a huge split in the world between how data privacy, particularly, and well as security, is viewed. And Europe, in short, is much stricter than the United States. So Europe, for example, just issued a European Union ruling called the Right to be Forgotten that would allow individuals or entities to make sure that you cannot be found by Google or Yahoo or anybody else. They went crazy when the Edward Snowden revelations came out and pulled back a lot of the opportunities for cloud companies to store data in the United States because they felt that it was improper for any of their citizens' data to be accessible by the United States government. And there's a whole lot of responses you could give to that, including that their own laws would allow just as onerous, if not more onerous, wiretapping. But there's a split between Europe and the United States. There's to harmonize that and to allow U.S. cloud providers to work with European clients and customers, something called the Safe Harbor approach, which is an approach that allows U.S. customers to promise to make certain commitments and protocols for safeguarding privacy and security, to memorialize those promises into a safe harbor provision in their contract, and in exchange for those commitments to safe harbor, you are permitted to do business with European customers. These are some other things: the Cloud Security Alliance, FedRAMP, which is the process that has been discussed, I think, at some length at the conference, about a specific set of procedures pursuant to which you can get a third party to come in, vet your systems, vet your protocols, confirm that you're compliant, and then get broad authority under certain higher level tiers of security risk to provide services to the government. And third-party audits, of course, are part and parcel of this, and again, are sort of standard operating procedure for sophisticated customers wanting to do business in the cloud space. State laws have been one of the biggest sources in terms of what happens after a data breach, the duty to disclose. You can see now with sort of 47 states, it's almost ubiquitous that some requirement about what happens when there is a data breach is in place, with, again, Massachusetts leading the way in terms of the prominence and ubiquity of their requirements. It obviously gets triggered by the sensitivity of the data, so personal data is one of the key ones. The person involved, and so often the state attorney general, are examples of the folks who need to get these sort of notices. These are some of the basic duties. There was a recent interesting law imposed in Florida on July 1st that took all this and sort of amplified each of these points. The Florida law added an express duty to provide reasonable security for covered data. It required within 10 days of the breach notification to customers. It required a customer to notify the data subjects within 30 days total, so there's another level of notification. The Attorney General is now, by Florida law, imposed into the process, including a requirement to provide them with forensic reports, breach policies. So in Florida, this is where that, I hope you had something in place about how you were going to prevent this, comes in, because they're going to expressly and statutorily require it. And by the way, for us lawyers, this sort of triggers all sorts of other concerns, because can you just imagine if you're in the middle of one of these, and you're under Florida statutory law to provide these notifications, yet one of your lawyers is going to be saying, oh my God, you're in basically conceding liability by putting this information out there. So you're in a little bit of a quandary. What do you do? And those are the sorts of things we try to help guide clients through. As I mentioned, the SEC, I've already talked about this a little bit. There are various and very recent, you see here on April 15th, 2014, risk alerts, where the SEC is basically increasingly making cybersecurity risk a material financial issue that is subject to disclosure and resolution in the reporting from publicly traded companies. So the SEC is basically acknowledging that this is a critical issue. Let me shift gears a little bit to what we're calling kind of new developments, and just give you, in the last few minutes of my presentation, some of the interesting recent developments in the courts. Did any of you hear about this case called Aereo that was just in the courts? So Aereo was a major disruptive company in the cable TV industry. And Aereo was a company that basically wanted to evade the payment of license rights to TV programmers under the theory that they were not providing the legal equivalent of a public performance of a copyrightable service. Aereo, instead of having what most cable TV companies have, which is a master download antenna and then a redistribution of that content to customers, Aereo had a gazillion individual antennas, each one dedicated to an individual customer. and therefore use that as a basis to argue that this was not a public performance, but rather a private performance, just the same as if the individuals or consumers had the antenna at their home. So this case got a lot of discussion as a cloud issue, and it was really quite fascinating what happened. Again, the ultimate legal issue was a copyright issue, and it was whether this was a public performance or a private performance, and whether that triggered the copyright laws. And just to end the suspense, the court ruled it was equivalent to a public performance, although they didn't quite come out and say that, but they said it, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it must be a duck. If it looks like a cable TV company and it acts like a cable TV company, it's going to be treated as a cable TV company, and the obligations to pay programmers were imposed. But here's where it gets interesting. Those were the real issues the court addressed. But the bulk of the time in the oral argument before the United States Supreme Court was on cloud computing. And people were scared to death that, in essence, the analogy could be made that the remote storage and downloading of content and redeployment of that information to a customer was very analogous to what cloud companies are doing. And therefore, that if the Supreme Court banned what Aereo was doing, that somebody down the road could use that same rationale to ban what cloud companies are doing. So just about all of the major tech industry filed amicus curiae in the Supreme Court. The justices spent the majority of the time talking about cloud, asking about cloud, getting, to be honest, incredibly confused about cloud. And they went out of their way, whatever they thought cloud was, to say, we don't want to screw up the cloud industry. We see it as this major sort of economic engine in the country. So please, please, whatever you do, don't interpret this decision to sort of hurt the cloud industry. And by the way, the really scary thing is, despite all those great words, it's very unclear whether that'll hold, because there is now a US Supreme Court decision on these remote devices. So it's kind of stay tuned on Aereo. Microsoft is another small company you've probably heard of in the cloud space. And we call it, just when you thought it was, this is a lawyer trying to make a joke, right? Safe harbor to go out into the water. So you have to back up a little bit to understand what this is all about. Remember I told you, Europe stricter than the United States. Then we have this sort of safe harbor. So this is an accommodation to kind of allow US cloud companies to serve in Europe. And that worked fine until Mr. Snowden came along. And when the Europeans said, oh my God, and they were shocked and appalled that the US eavesdropped on customers, go figure, they said the safe harbor, all bets are off. And we're going to re-examine that. And they are re-examining that and redoing that to see whether that will still work. So in the meantime, one of the solutions that many US cloud companies, including Microsoft, said, this is about as kludged and raw as it gets, would say, you know what? We're just going to promise you in Europe that we will keep all of your European data in Europe. Problem solved. So Microsoft had a data center in Ireland. The US government thought that there were some folks that were trafficking in drugs or otherwise in illegal activities, and they wanted to track that information about those folks, which they felt were on a Microsoft cloud. And a quick dichotomy, subpoenas versus warrants. A subpoena is something that can be issued without the need for a judge and has international reach. A warrant is something that a law enforcement agency actually goes to a judge to get, but only applies in the United States. And in this case, law enforcement got a warrant saying, Microsoft, turn over that data. And Microsoft said, well, the warrant, which is what you got, only applies to data in the United States. This data is in Ireland. It's only in Ireland, and it's really important for us to preserve the dignity of that distinction, because that's how we're keeping all these European regulators happy and allowing us to continue to do business. And the judge ruled, sorry, won't work. And the judge went out of their way to kind of create this sort of hybrid subpoena warrant that bottom line said, you know what, Microsoft? If you control that data as a US corporate entity, even though you're prophylactically, physically keeping it in Ireland, That's not good enough. If it's under your control, under this kind of new theory that the court came up with, you have to turn it over. So this case, which was considered by a federal district court, is now being appealed to the Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a very high-level court. It's the only court before the United States Supreme Court. Just about all the tech companies are involved in this case, and this is sort of a hot issue in how to comply with data privacy and security issues. Some other quick highlights, and then I'll try and conclude. The White House actually continues to be pretty proactive in this space. At the beginning of the year, they released various recommendations, which, remember I told you there were about 47 different states that had variations of breach notifications, and so the federal government is trying to play a helpful role. One thinks whether that's an oxymoron or not, to say we really ought to kind of harmonize this, instead of having a U.S. cloud company that maybe does business in a bunch of different states face all these different potentially conflicting obligations, let's just do it once and do it properly. So the White House has advocated that, and in a couple slides I'm going to show you examples of proposals for that. And they wanted amendments to the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. And basically there's this long-standing but somewhat arcane distinction that says, remember I said subpoena warrant, subpoena law enforcement can just go get it, warrant you actually need a judge to get it, it's more onerous. For data that was stored less than 180 days, you only needed a subpoena, you needed a warrant for beyond. They want to harmonize that and make it consistent. Cybersecurity is another big topic for pending congressional legislation. One of the concepts is that the fear of liability that a company has, if I've been hacked or I've been breached and somebody could say it's my fault, would constrain me from otherwise telling not only other affected companies, but maybe sharing what could be a common problem. So if the target breach was something that could have affected Sears and Macy's and other companies, the policy goal through all these sorts of bills in Congress is to kind of allow sharing of information to stop cybersecurity threats from occurring while protecting people who can share from their fear of getting into more hot water and creating more problems than they're solving by sharing that information. None of these laws have passed yet. There are various sub-issues associated with these. In one instance, it did pass, I should say, by the House. The President didn't like it for various reasons. So these would be a good thing for Congress to pass for the cloud industry. The better that there's confidence and comfort over cybersecurity issues, the better it is for cloud stakeholders. This is where I was telling you on data breach notification. Congress has been really busy on this one. There are a variety of bills in different status. Some of the issues associated with those bills are, to the extent that there's required notification, how long do you have to notify? And what's the proper balance of roles between the United States government versus states who have historically been very active in this space? This is ECPA reform. In the interest of time, I'm going to skip through that. Here's one you may have heard in the press. This is one of the few sort of telecom-y issues that has gotten a lot of publicity. Net neutrality, I don't know if that expression is familiar to any of you. It's been a red hot issue. It's been the hottest issue in the history of the Federal Communications Commission. We had in Washington, D.C., Occupy FCC, so we had public interest groups pitching tents out in front of the commission. They've received over 3 million comments at the FCC on net neutrality. There have been more comments lodged on the issue of net neutrality than any other issue in FCC history. Net neutrality on its face is a network issue, and it goes to the issue of saying to a network provider, you cannot block, you cannot discriminate, you cannot prefer. All the masses are treated equally, and you cannot prefer any particular provider or discriminate. So if Verizon wants to prefer its own traffic, this net neutrality law on its face would say, cannot do that. The other side of net neutrality is to say that doesn't work so well for example, Netflix, which may want to pay extra to get a better, more secure, more robust connection to its customers to improve the quality of the service to its customers. Or a cloud company may be interested in getting some sort of, in exchange for a payment, a preferential or prioritized sort of run through a network so that a customer may say, you know, we're not going to have our mission critical data that we may need in a crisis be subject to the same public internet pipeline that somebody who's downloading something, let's just assume, much less socially important than mission critical data for a business. This has been an incredibly hot issue, and the cloud industry, just about every cloud company and tech industry has weighed in on this. Interestingly, weighing in favor of net neutrality, that is, in favor of obligations which would keep the network open. I happen to think that that may be something that needs to be rethought and is not necessarily the wisest approach. Let me just wrap up. Europe continues to be very active in this. Again, repeating a theme here, they're stricter, they're inconsistent. They are, as we speak, considering in the European Union, which is sort of the political body that encompasses a number of countries within Europe, new data protection regulation. It would have specific restrictions on U.S. involvement and transfers of data between Europe and the United States. It would expressly harmonize concerns about the Edward Snowden situation, public authority access, the Microsoft issue. Scheduled for a vote by the end of the year. Here's the interesting report that I saw. If this European Union regulation were to pass in its current form, only 1% of the cloud providers are currently in compliance with the proposed regulation. So this is going to get some real attention if this continues to march forward. Right to be forgotten, I already mentioned to you. That's it. Thank you very much for your attention. You guys were a sporting audience. I was the last one between you and lunch or heading home. Are there any questions before we adjourn? Yes.
So I have a question, a little bit off topic.
Sure. So the question is, technology is changing, and how is the government thoughtfully handling that? Yes and no. I mean, I think there, in fairness, there's been a White House sort of data privacy security working group that's been in place for quite a while. And I think they are trying to take that into account. I think Congress talks about that a lot. I think the reality is it is happening a little fast. I think to some degree the government relies on industry to kind of help it keep up. So for example, a lot of the companies represented at this conference, Microsoft, Google, IBM, are regular appearances or lobbyists or meetings, whether it's at the FCC or in Congress, to kind of let them know what's going on. So it's a little bit of a hodgepodge. It's probably not the most effective way to kind of keep up, because when somebody's appearing in one of those meetings or situations, they probably have a viewpoint or a position that they're trying to kind of advocate. So the information that they're sharing is probably targeted to support that. But it is fascinating. I mean, the technology continues to just motor. I mean, wireless is going crazy right now. Washington is totally obsessed with wireless. We're trying to find, it's all about spectrum. So we're repurposing old TV spectrum to use for cellular. And there's a lot going on. So I think the answer is the government is trying to keep up, and it's probably spotty how well they're doing. Other questions? Yes. And I have partners who are super-duper experts on that, but I can give you a sort of superficial answer, and I could get you more information. By the way, I should offer any of you that would like it, we will give you for free. We do a white paper, which is pretty fancy and actually would have the answer to your question. So if you give me your card afterwards, I'll email it to you. But a hodgepodge. I know that Asia, we happen to have done some work and had some involvement in Singapore. And in Singapore, they're very advanced. They've looked at this hard and have moved forward. My sense right now is Europe is still the toughest in terms of having laws probably based on historical antecedents that are really tougher. I think in Asia, my impression is a sense that this advancement in technology and the development of the cloud computing industry is a good thing, and that they want to encourage that. And then in the balancing of their policy priorities, that's probably the top priority. So they're looking to adapt rules and regulations that won't get in the way of cloud moving forward. But if you give me your card, I'll send you our white paper, and we've got Asia and everything else covered. Other questions? Okay, thank you guys very much. Appreciate it.